will try to join us if he can, but he wasn't feeling well earlier. Eric Kitchen called ahead to say that he wasn't going to be able to make it, but we do have a quorum. And so I would like to call the May 2nd Health, Human Services, and Housing meeting to order. Do we have everything set with the recordings? Great. And our first order of business tonight is I've asked Aaron Baroud from the legal services of the Hudson Valley team to give us an overview of their work on the contract that the legislature set in motion last year. Might have been last year, was it the end of the year before, but it was a, she'll explain more, but this was an initiative that came out of this committee in the prior term, and I thought it would be good for her to share. And I heard a little bit of this a few weeks ago in a meeting with the county executive, and it was very interesting, and I wanted everyone here to hear from them directly. Yeah. So the floor is yours.
Okay. I'm Erin Baroud. I'm the attorney in charge of the Ulster County Office of Legal Services of the Hudson Valley. Thank you to Abe and the committee for asking me to come tonight and speak. So what I'm going to talk about is a grant that we were awarded, I believe it was the end of 2022, supposed to start beginning of 2023. Due to some staffing issues, we started it May 1st, 2023. And the grant was forecasted to fund one full-time housing attorney and one full-time housing counselor. For various reasons, mostly how long the cases are taking now to get through court and to come to our, happy to answer any questions that anyone has. Okay, so for this grant, we were able to open or start working on 108 housing cases. Like I said, we didn't start till May, and you don't get all the cases right up front when the grant starts. So over time, you know, we were able to resolve 58 of those cases to completion. The remaining 50 cases that we had started working on, we then had, you know, moved some funding around from other areas and were able to move those cases because we have an obligation. We can't just like abandon a client if we're out of funding. So we absorbed those through other funding sources. And so this grant was really, really cutting edge in our agency, and I think maybe across the state, because it allowed us to have an attorney, but also a housing counselor who was able to focus on case management. Most grants that you apply for legal, they don't have that option. You know, you have to apply for other grants to get the case management piece. And we found that it is so critical to have both. You know, I've been at legal services for 10 years, and when I started, cases seemed to kind of move through the courts, move through quickly. Now, you know, because of many circumstances, the pandemic, mental health, cases do not. They take time. Every client is at a different place. They need certain, like our clients are vulnerable. They are receive disability, or they should be receiving disability benefits. They, you know, have mental health issues, cognitive disabilities. They have, you know, they can't work because of childcare issues. We really try to serve that population. And a case comes in, and, you know, there's a couple kinds of cases in housing court. We have non-pays, which we live in a state that has great protections for our tenants. You know, in a non-pay, you're able to satisfy the arrears right up until the execution of the warrant. So, you know, that's huge because the day before the sheriff is knocking, if you or us through case management are able to get funds together, we can prevent an eviction. In holdovers, you know, a lot of times that's for some sort of conduct or lease non-renewal or something like that. A lot of times we do have to go to trial, or we can negotiate time for a client to move out. So in Ulster County and a lot of counties in New York, time is a tenant's friend right now. One of, you know, we have great protections in terms of predicate notices and all of that for tenants. But that doesn't really matter if there isn't places for tenants to move to if they have to, if there aren't funds to kind of help lift people up out of these, you know, if they fall on hard times or if they're out of work for a reason or something. So we're in a great spot in some ways, but without an attorney, without case managers to kind of navigate through those protections, it's, you know, kind of all for naught. So a lot of landlord attorneys tell us that, you know, we're litigating technicalities, and that may be true, but the state has decided those technicalities are important to our tenants, and also they're important because there's nowhere for people to move right now. So that's kind of why we are trying to take an approach of litigating as many cases as we can, trying to negotiate, you know, longer move-out times, you know, waive arrears so that someone can start fresh somewhere new. But the really kind of unique piece that we added to this grant was the housing counselor. And so the housing counselor, he meets with clients. Once an attorney does the evaluation, they decide that, you know, I think it would be beneficial for you to work with our housing counselor. He has a housing assessment, like, you know, what barriers are there to sustainable housing. He'll work on a budget with them. You know, if someone's income, if they're not receiving all the benefits that they may be entitled to, he can kind of figure that out, help them with applications to kind of increase the income in the home. You know, that's all really important to making these resolutions sustainable, and without that piece, it's kind of, you know, we're just putting band-aids on it. So some of the other things, and I'm sorry, can I grab my water? My allergies are killing me. And I'm like, oh, I have one actually back there. I'm so sorry. Sorry. So some of the other things the housing counselor does to kind of work on sustainability is one of the key pieces. So about 52% of the of the cases that we handled last year were considered non-pay. And as I mentioned, you can resolve a non-pay by paying right up until the eviction happens. So a lot of time is spent trying to figure out what funds have pots of money available to kind of piece together for a client to pay off those arrears. We have internal grants that we use, as we also work with Family of Woodstock, United Way, Catholic Charities, Community Action. Sometimes a client's able to get funds from a family member, or, you know, waiting on a settlement from court for another matter, and we're able to kind of piece these together, pay off arrears, and maintain the housing. Now, every agency has their own application, their own guidelines, their own, you know, papers that need to be filled out. The landlord has to fill this out. The, you know, the client has to attest to this and that. So it takes a lot of time. We have to collect these checks. Sometimes the court isn't willing to wait as long as maybe would be necessary to resolve it. So, you know, we need to get guarantee letters and all that. So that's like a big part of what our housing counselor does. Additionally, we have clients who, you know, suffer from mental illness. You know, they may have a hoarding disorder, which we're seeing a lot more in our elder clients, or clients kind of, you know, who have physical disabilities. And hoarding disorder is a recognized, diagnosable disorder, mental health disorder, and it's affecting a lot of our clients. So the housing counselor can oftentimes work with that individual to kind of come up with some plans, like who can we find in the community, or to, you know, kind of help support you. A lot of times, if a person has, like the lease will say, you know, you have to keep it free of clutter, and it has to be, you can go through the hallways and all that. And if they can't, that's grounds for eviction. So a lot of times we are able to reach out to community partners. Sometimes if people are on Medicaid and they need assistance with daily living activities, we can get them like an aide to come in and help kind of with the upkeep. But a lot of times we have to figure out a way how to pay for a deep clean. Carpets need to be cleaned. Maybe they need to remove things from storage or put into storage. Sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, I've had my attorneys going into apartments and throwing out garbage and food and that sort of thing. So these are tasks that a lot of times an attorney, even though like we're in this business to be helpers, we can't really spend all that time on. So when we have a housing counselor who can connect the case managers and provide some case management themselves, it frees the attorneys up to do a lot more of the legal work. So that is a really important component. Also, a lot of times evictions are unfortunately not able to be prevented. Could be for many reasons. It could be, you know, totally valid. The landlord is moving a family member in. The landlord wants to get out of the rental game, you know. Maybe the tenant is just not a great tenant. So we can totally understand that. And when appropriate, our housing counselor will assist clients with relocation plans. That often requires applications to be filled out for different subsidies, different apartments, sometimes private apartments, sometimes, you know, KHA applications and that sort of thing to just try and get a safe landing place for that client. With that comes a lot of times moving costs. Clients' budgets are stretched. They can't afford always to pay the security required or the moving costs, the storage costs. And so we are able to work with community partners to try and get those funds for our clients a lot of times. And if they're able to save the furnishings or, you know, their only family wealth is like a Bible that came from their ancestors and, you know, they can't take it with them to emergency housing, we can put it in storage. That's huge. And sometimes if we can't relocate a client, you know, we will assist, try and coordinate with the Sheriff's Office and Department of Social Services to try and make sure that, you know, we can get our client there safely. Not all clients need this kind of case management, but a lot of times there are clients because they do. They're vulnerable, they have health issues. You know, someone has medical supplies that have to be refrigerated and, you know, maybe they have a support animal and they don't have the appropriate documentation. So we try and help with that where possible. So that's like a lot of the tasks that our housing counselor has been working on. And just to kind of show how those work together, you know, we recently had a veteran client who he had a traumatic brain injury. He wasn't really able to read or write because of that, and he was being evicted. The conditions were poor in the apartment that they were in, and rent wasn't really that affordable. So it was kind of determined that we would assist the client in finding something smaller, more affordable. So we filled up the applications with him. He couldn't read, he couldn't write. You know, we assisted in filling out funds. A large gentleman, he needed a bigger bed for his new apartment because he wasn't fitting in the bed that he had. You know, also we determined with that client, he, like through our housing assessment, our budget, that part of the reason he couldn't afford his rent is because some of his funds were going to medical costs that he really shouldn't have had to pay for. They should have been covered because of his disability under Medicare, Medicaid. And so we were able to connect him with OFA. He was able to work on getting that, and you know, that opened up a whole little bit of money to use towards rent. Similarly, we had a client, and stop me if you need
to. Okay. Similarly, I think we'll probably move to questions in like one more
minute. Okay, yeah. So similarly, we have another client who recently could not afford her apartment. It was through the budget we determined that her funds were going to food. Her funds shouldn't have been going to food. She was eligible to receive SNAP benefits. And it turns out through some investigation, the client's SNAP benefits were going to the estranged partner who was incarcerated, and she had no access to those funds. So she was spending her money, her very limited income, on food when she shouldn't have had to. So we were able to kind of investigate and get the money put into her name so she had access to food and her apartment became affordable again. So those are just some of the things that we you know, are up against and working towards with this grant, and it's been an amazing grant, like I said, really cutting edge, and we thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Questions, Gregory?
Out of all your clients that come for help, are there any situations where you could not help the person?
Yes.
And if so, if you don't mind sharing why.
So there is various reasons why we may not be able to help someone. Sometimes people are over income. You know, so we can refer them to the private bar. This grant gave us a little bit more flexibility than we have had under our Legal Services Corporation grant to help more people. Okay. It allowed us to go up to 80% AMI, which is good. Usually, you know, we can only go up to 200% of the poverty level. So this gave us some extra room. Sometimes there's conflicts. You know, we may have represented the landlord in a foreclosure action. We can't help the tenant, unfortunately, at that point. So we try to refer out. Sometimes, you know, the case is not ripe enough yet. They're not. We try to start cases before they enter court, but depending on resources, sometimes we can't. And sometimes the client just isn't receptive to our help, and they kind of go MIA sometimes. So we try to get them to engage, but if they don't, then we eventually have to let them go. So.
Other questions? Yep. Yep. Sure. How many of these counselors do you have? Do you have just? And this is the first one they've ever had.
We have one. We have one other person who works with a grant called STEP in our office, Solutions to End Homelessness Program, and that was a rental arrears program that's actually going to be ending the end of September. So that person has, you know, her duties will be ending. But we are the only office in our agency that has a position like this, and we are honestly the envy of most of the other offices, because it's truly, truly needed.
Legislator Bollins?
If I'm reading this correctly, the Ulster Addiction Defense Project had 29 cases that you were successful in. It's very small.
So
That means those people did not have to go to emergency services, emergency housing. Is that what that means?
So with this, so I didn't make this chart, but so we had 58 cases that were closed, and of those 58, we were able to provide direct representation to 31 of those,
okay,
which I think you'll see. I should.
That's very cool.
And then of those 31 where we were able to represent in court or in administrative proceedings, we were able to prevent a homelessness episode in 29 of those. So if we're able to, like, fully work with a client, like 93% of the time we are successful. It's just a matter of you know, when the client comes to us, you know, if we have resources. A lot of these other cases we had to move will probably wind up being successful. We just aren't tracking them anymore under this fund.
That's very short. And you're only working in the city of Kingston at this time, is that correct? Or is
so right now, unfortunately, we are prioritizing city of Kingston residents because we have their right to counsel grant, and that is still active. We haven't expended that. This grant was expended at the end of January, unfortunately.
And so the grant ends in September of this year. That's the STEP.
That's the STEP.
Excuse me.
That's not our grant.
That's a
state grant.
So if you had more funding, you could obviously have more of these counselors to assist with.
Yes.
Can you speak to the way that the funding sources, having funding to help pay for arrears,
yes,
helps speed up the resolution of a case?
Most definitely. So when there is a pot of funds, whether that be, you know, our internal funds that we've gotten from other programs, or if it's funding from DSS, or if it's funding, you know, from Family Woodstock, if we are able to draw on those funds to pay arrears, you know, we could go in the first day with guarantee letter, the first court appearance with guarantee letters, and if there's nothing to litigate, because, you know, it really is a non-pay, it's because someone fell behind or something, we could dispose of the case that day. You know, we just tender the money, the eviction's canceled, the case is dismissed, and the tenancy is retained. If there are funds for things like deep cleans and that sort of thing, and we don't have to jump through hoops to get them, we can get them. You know, we can get cleans scheduled within a matter of weeks. We can get a landlord to agree to a probationary period, like if they keep their apartment clean for 3 months, the case will go away. Mm. They can keep their tenancy, and that's really important. So just legal services alone is not enough, and I think we're finding that across the country. It really has to go hand in hand with, you know, counseling services and this pot of money or funds to kind of help resolve the case. It's good because then the landlord is not losing out on that money. They're getting their arrears. They're getting their properties being maintained because they're being cleaned. But it's also, you know, the client or the tenant is staying housed. So it really goes hand in hand. And, you know, I'd be happy to provide more statistics or data about that, more anecdotes. But really we're finding that our housing counselor is working on almost every single one of these cases in some capacity.
Once you bring the tenant current, does the case manager, well, during this period, they're working with them on a budget so that they don't fall behind again?
Yes, that is one of the goals. We really want to make it sustainable for the client. You know, we, not all clients are receptive, but the budget shows, you know, what they should be using for housing. You know, their food, their this, their that. Sometimes we find clients like write it out and they're like, I didn't realize I was paying an extra $200 a month on streaming services or something. And it's something they're able to cut out if not necessary. Or we had a client who didn't realize she had 7 storage units. and so when we were able to kind of assist her in weeding through that, you know, the budget becomes a lot more realistic.
So that has to be proven before you pay for them to get out of
some grants require it, some grants do not.
Okay.
We really, like, we don't want to be paternalistic with this approach, but we have to work within the grant guidelines. Some grants will say, you know, if this is not affordable going forward, we're not going to give you the
legislator Nolan.
So if what type of funding is needed, the same level that we've had or a higher level to continue doing this work? And if you were designing it, where would you put funds that could be directed towards keeping people housed?
So I think we recently submitted a kind of like a concept paper where it expanded the program and it essentially doubled the staffing. It's still now, there's still always going to be some sort of need. We just, like, I think if you'll see, you know, evictions continue to go up. We had a lull during the pandemic, but we're really, you know, we're up to 900, and this is just what's reported. So, you know, doubling the staffing, we think we could double the capacity. But I would also make a recommendation, for whatever it's worth, that there be some sort of funds that people can use to kind of help in their legal case, not just the legal services, not just the case management.
But things for, like, the arrears.
Oh, for the arrears, yes. Yeah. That's hugely important, especially when you look at the breakdown of cases, and more than half are non-pay cases. You know, once you, you know, you have some sort of, you know, you get a divorce, you lose an income, it gets you behind, that just spirals. you know, your tire pops, you have to put your funds into to fixing that. Then you're behind, you're constantly running behind. And sometimes it really is as simple as like getting someone 2 months of arrears. And sometimes, you know, it extends longer. Sometimes people are out of work for injuries and whatnot. So arrears are hugely important. I really can't give like a number or a the sweet spot because I'm not really sure. But what we could do is kind of outlined. I think the Chinese Ex Office has it.
If there's no other questions, I'd love to go into. Do we have a question from the executives team? Okay, yep. Okay.
I hope we could talk later. I'm just curious. It's very fresh, but I'm curious your take on the opt-in good cause eviction that just passed and how that might relieve some of this if a municipality were to opt in.
So, New York State has several like very awesome kind of like laws, new laws. So the good cause eviction law that has literally just come across, if people opt in, you know, we hope we see it. But without attorneys to kind of navigate through that, I don't know how successful it's going to be. You know, the same with the Emergency Tenant Protection Act for the city of Kingston. It's complicated to try and figure out, like, you know, rent reductions and all that stuff. So same with the Tenant Dignity and Safe Housing Act. You now in New York State, as of the end of the year, can initiate an action against your landlord to, you know, make repairs, do repairs. I think it's going to be hard for tenants to do that on their own. So we are starting to file some of those cases kind of in a group to try and get that done. And same with another, you know, going back all the way back to the amendments made in 2019, there's a provision that if someone cannot find housing and they're not being evicted for something objectionable, like objectionable behavior, as they call it, but just because, you know, there is no housing that's in the same school district near their work and all that, a judge can grant up to a year's stay so that they can stay housed. Paying rent, obviously, but not have to leave. And that's another, like, even we haven't been very successful with that. So there's all these great things out there. I just don't know how usable to, like, the average tenant they're going to be.
Thank you so much for being here. Sorry for
running over.
No, it's
thank
fine.
You
this
so
is important
much.
Information. Yeah, thank you. It's great to see this
thank you.
Program.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Again, thank you to Aaron from Legal Services of the Hudson Valley. And with that, we will go into our resolutions. Actually, before we go into resolutions, we've got to approve the minutes. Thank you, Legislator McCullough, keeping me honest on that. I would entertain a motion to approve the April 4th meeting minutes.
I'll make the motion.
All right, moved by Legislator McCullough, second by Legislator Harmon. Any discussion on the minutes from last month? All right, then I will take a vote on the minutes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the minutes are approved. Resolution number 214, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a contract with the New York State Housing Trust Fund Corporation as a subsidiary of the New York State Housing Finance Agency for funding for the implementation of a leading in lead program grant agreement, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget through the Department of Planning. And before we take a motion to discuss, I will, we can either take a motion to discuss or let's do what we've been doing. We'll go straight to the Director of Planning and have discussion, and then we'll take a motion to adopt when that time comes. So, Director Doyle, would you?
Thank you, Chair. Much appreciated. I'm going to turn this over to Kai. He wrote the grant, and we've been working with the Health Department on it to Kai to have to explain it.
So really quick, this is a governor initiative. It's really focused on like collaborations between planning departments and health departments. So this is a collaboration with our health department. $326,000 for remediation of multifamily units and a prioritization of rental units, multifamily, two or more units with children or pregnant women. And there's a focus on what they call the community of concern, which is the 12401 zip code, where we see the highest like prevalence of multifamily units with. So this is, we have to put on an RFP to work with a community partner who will contract to do the remediation work. Hopefully, in not too many cases, it might require relocation. There's funding in the grant for relocation for 2 months. This is a lead up to a state law that goes into effect in 2025, which will start placing penalties on rental units that do have the presence of lead to require remediation. And a lot of cases, landlords don't necessarily have the funds to do the remediation work, so this is providing funds up front to do that remediation work. It's likely that they'll need funds in the future for this as well, but this is the first.
Chair, if I could add to that,
please.
We've had a very good relationship with the Health Department and their lead folks relative to trying to make sure that we anticipate all the problems and issues that we face. I would say this, the grant has a very, very small amount for administration. The likelihood that we're going to be able to administer, to find a third party to administer the grant with respect to the administration funds may be difficult. So if that, if we find ourselves in a situation where we need additional assistance, we may be back to the legislature for additional administrative assistance relative to this. We'll see when the RFP process comes out, but we're very much concerned about trying to find someone to help implement that work. And there's a substantial amount of work that has to be out there. The other thing we're hearing from the contractors, people that are doing lead remediation, is that there are few, if any, lead remediation contractors.
Hmm. Legislator McCullough.
If you had to come back to us, what's the estimated dollar amount you think it would take to?
We wouldn't know yet. With the RFP in place, we would ask. One of the things that we're talking about is typically our contracts with third parties are reimbursement contracts, which means the money goes out the door and then we pay them. The state is moving to something called a cost incurred contract, where they present invoices and we pay on invoice with proof of payment coming later. That's a discussion we're having now with respect to the affordable rental upgrade program. That relieves some of the cash flow issues, some of the cost of money, which has gone up significantly. That's the first discussion we're having. We've had some discussions with the controller about that. We believe that that's the way to go. That's the way the state is going. That reduces some of the administrative burden on the administrative cost burden. I don't imagine it'll be a significant cost, but it's currently, I think the current administrative reimbursement is 10%, as I recall.
10 or 15, it's $42,000.
Yeah. So, maybe half the cost. So given that, and given the amount of money and the amount of work that has to be done, we may be back to you for some additional money. We believe that we can find a partner, but at this particular point in time, it's just a question of what they can do. What we certainly don't want to find ourselves in is the county issuing individual contracts associated with these remediation. That's a huge amount of effort at the contract management stage and at the oversight stage.
Any other questions from the committee? Any points of discussion? Then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 214. I saw Legislator Corcoran's hand up first, and I'm going to take that as a second from Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 214 is adopted unanimously. Resolution number 230, confirming appointment of members to the Ulster County Youth Board. Let's see, does anyone from the executive team want to? I mean, these are pretty standard appointments, but if there's any, I know we have three of them here. Otherwise, I'll just take a motion to adopt them, unless anyone has any Okay.
Comment.
Yep. Moved by Legislator Harmon, second by Legislator McCullough. Any discussion on confirming Abigail Kelly? Okay, then I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Right. Resolution 231, confirming appointment of members to the Community Services Board. I'll take the motion to adopt. I move by Legislator Collins, second by Legislator Corcoran. Any discussion on appointing Maya Hambright to the Community Services Board? All right, I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Resolution number 233, confirming appointment of a member to the Community Services Board's Substance Abuse Subcommittee. I have a motion to adopt. Moved by Legislator Harmon, second by Legislator Corcoran. Any discussion on appointing Maya Hambright, the same person from the prior resolution, to the subcommittee of the Community Services Board Substance Abuse Subcommittee? Any discussion? All right, I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 234, approving the execution of a contract for $192,297 entered into by the county with Health Alliance Marys Avenue Campus Department of Health. And I will defer to, this is mental health, so I'm guessing Commissioner McDonald's.
Yep.
So this is an annual update to this contract. It's state aid money that we're getting from the Office of Mental Health flows through us to Health Alliance to provide crisis intervention services within the psychiatric emergency departments or psychiatric emergency room. The hope is that, and what the deliverables for the contract is that anyone that is experiencing an acute psychiatric crisis would be getting some service and they would be getting a follow-up. So outside of just the assessment of whether they need to be inpatient or not, there's also, so what is it like for you at home? Do you have any need for ongoing care connected to a clinic? And really, it's that follow-up that 2 days later to say you were in the hospital, how are you doing today? That's basically the service.
Thank you. Any questions for Commissioner McDonald? Any discussion on Resolution 234? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 234.
McCullough.
By Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 235, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $71,857 entered into by the county with Mental Health Associates in Ulster County, Inc. through the Department of Mental Health. And again, I will defer to Commissioner McDonald.
Sure. This is additional funding that we're getting from OMH State Aid to add a position to our ACT team to focus on vocation. So the idea is that, yes, these folks have an intense psychiatric disability, but they will be working through their treatment to one day go to work. And it would be a part of that team modality that says, you know, you have the RN that's working on your physical health, you have the prescriber that's getting you your psychotropic medication, there is a substance use case act that's there, and now there will be a vocational counselor.
Any questions from the committee for Commissioner McDonald? Any discussion? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 235.
Right.
Moved by Legislator Collins, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 236, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with SUNY Cortland for field work assignment at the Department of Health. This is through the Department of Health, and Acting Commissioner Rosen, do you want to give us any background on this?
This is a 5-year agreement between the Health Department and SUNY Cortland. This is allowing medical staff nurses to do field work within our, what we embody at the Health Department. The agreement basically just sort of stipulates that we have precautions set forth for the students coming in, protections, harassment, those type of things. But it's no cost to the county. no cost to the college. And again, this is an agreement that was sort of a new contract, but it's a continuation of a prior term agreement. We really haven't used the contract at all over the last 5 years because of COVID, but we're hoping to get back into the routine with the college. And it's also worth to note that we also have an agreement, same type of agreement with Mount St. Mary and Newburgh, which will probably be coming down the pike depending on when they sign, either next meeting or the following.
Any questions for Deputy Director Gibney? Any discussion? All right, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 236. Okay. Moved by Legislator McCullough, second by Legislator Corcoran. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 237, adopting proposed local law number 3 of 2024, local law amending Article 5 of the Ulster County Charter through local law 2 of 2006, amending Article 5 of the Administrative Code for the County of Ulster, local law number 10 of 2008, to modify various provisions in relation to the Commissioner of Health or Public Health Director and the Medical Examiner. And I on this topic, I shared a memo with the committee from the county executive about the kind of a status update on the search for a health commissioner. And it's obviously a hard search because even the acting health commissioner and deputy didn't stay long enough to start this conversation. But in any event, I'll defer to Deputy Executive Contreras to give us an update on how the search is going before we discuss the resolution to make the search more effective.
Sure. So the search is open. We've gotten applications. Most of them are not physicians, but we started interviewing them to see what the pool was like, and we're optimistic and excited about the people who are interviewing, and two of them have been public health directors in other states. One of them has a master's in public health, the other one, they both have masters in public health. One of them is enrolled in her doctorate of public health. And they have, the expertise, prior experiences range from being a director of infection control for a hospital, a district lead epidemiologist for a county board of health, these types of roles that would translate directly to being a public health director. So I do think that, given what we've seen in the interview so far, we would be well served by this charter amendment. We'll continue to keep interviewing people. If there are people who have, the MD and a master's in public health who are interested in applying, we would certainly love to interview them. But I think casting a wide net is our best bet. And again, any person who's appointed has to be vetted by the state commissioner of health. So it's whoever it is going to be highly qualified.
Great. Yep. Legislator Corker.
So I'm not opposed either way, but when you say most that interviewed didn't have the MD, was there any that?
Yes, I interviewed one person.
One.
Who has an MD, and she is at the very beginning of her career. So
okay.
She just graduated from medical school. So in terms of being a health commissioner, the other folks are, more prepared to take on a role.
Understandable. I just have to answer that question in my
course.
Class.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sure we'll. Well, never mind.
Just let you know.
Maybe this person in their 20s is, or I don't know, really good. Yep, I saw Legislator Collins hand first and then Legislator Harmon.
So assuming that we adopt this, does this have to go to a public vote in November? Is it a charter change?
No.
No.
It's not that kind of a charter change.
No, this is from the, sorry, if I may, this is from the bucket of changes that did not need to go to referendum that we failed to adopt at the end of last term because there was controversy regarding a change to the planning board chair election process.
Okay.
Not chair election, the planning director process, which comes from the planning board. And that
this is entirely up to us. It's not up to
this is entirely up to us and would be on the books were it not for an adjacent piece of an adjacent change that would have passed before we even knew that Commissioner Smith was retiring. And Legislator Harmon.
Yes. So I just, you know, I wanted to check my work here because I thought I knew what I was talking about, but then I wanted to be sure I knew what I was talking about. So if it is helpful, there really is just an entirely different set of skills. Like the crane operator is not the one you want actually like signing the contracts, right? So like, I get wanting us to be best served, and I get why that MD sounds so good. I get it, and yet it's not necessarily.
Right.
Just trying to be helpful.
Yep, Legislator Corcoran.
Understandable, right? But again, just knowing what goes on the tax side here, I think I'm answering to my side, basically saying, and this is my understanding of it, and this is how I'm okay with it. As long as the best person qualified is hired, I'm good with that.
Yep.
And if we have to bypass an MD that's included in that because she's in the beginning of her career, and we exceed that, I'm okay with that. But I'm not telling you that everybody will. Again, understanding what you're saying, I'm always looking for the best qualified person, and I'm okay, and I understand what you're saying ideally. So absolutely.
And I'll just mention, because this is such a friendly conversation, that you guys are totally bordering on my limit for crosstalk.
Yeah.
So just throwing that out there. Legislator Collins.
I'm going to do a little bit more up forwarding on that.
Great.
I'm getting the same pressure from my constituents. And I agree with you entirely.
Okay. Any other questions for Deputy Executive Contreras or points of discussion on this topic? Okay. Then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 237.
I'll move.
Moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor? Any opposed?
No. Understandably opposed.
Understood. So that was one opposed, and I think four in support. Great. Resolution 238, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $351,000 entered by the county with Family of Woodstock, Inc. through the Department of Social Services, and I will defer to Commissioner Iaposi to give us some background.
Thank you. So these are placements that are after-hours emergency housing provider Family of Woodstock makes, and it's not lost on me that it's a substantial amount to be amending this contract. But it's really attributable to the significant increases we saw, particularly during the second half of 2023, where our monthly averages went up as much as 100 to 150 per month between June and December. And that created a lot more activity by Family of Woodstock for after-hours reservations. And it also meant that we expanded the hotels and motels that they were using. And the reason for the timing around this resolution to amend that contract is that by the time we got all their invoices in to close out the 2023 books, this is what we were faced with to be able to satisfy the invoices that were received.
Any questions for, Mr. Collins?
So making sure I understand this, they gave us invoices beyond what the initial allocation was for their contract. Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay.
And this is for the after-hours services that they provide to find locations for people to.
And just to clarify, they were in communication with you throughout that whole period and were being asked to provide those services and make those placements.
Yes, absolutely.
So this was, if I may, I'm asking.
I'll keep answering.
Yeah. This was within the contract term, but an increase in the volume within that calendar term that was steady. Okay, understood. Got it.
I have one more question.
Yep, Legislator Collins.
Do we have the belief that Family of Woodstock will be able to give us more timely updates on their expenses instead of 4 months into a new year or previous year's expenses. I know you may not be able to answer that question, but that's a concern.
I'll take a crack at it. I do with regard to this contract. That's Departmental Social Services has with Family Woodstock, because I know that we meet regularly and we discuss the importance of timely billing because of the need to have accurate information in connection with the contracts we have with them. So I think that we can expect that with this contract. And you know, 30 to 90 days is not necessarily a long time frame when you're billing for these kinds of services, kind of like one quarter ahead.
Legislator Nolan.
And just as a follow-up to that, was there also a component of the delay for the service organization because we were backed up at DSS, and is that now being addressed?
You know, not necessarily. We have extremely close communication between the DSS Emergency Housing Unit and Family Woodstock. So on any given day, and I think we might have talked about this when Michael Berg appeared, it's a very fluid process. So we start trying to identify available emergency housing inventory at 9 in the morning, and hourly throughout the course of the day until 5 o'clock, we're calling all of the hotels and motels and shelters that we use. And at 5 o'clock, when we close, depending on the number of emergency homeless that still need to be placed, we're communicating that information to Family Woodstock. So I hope that answers your question. I don't think we were incurring any unforeseen delays. We were actually transacting information in real time every day. Another variable though that does occur to me is that frequently the hotels and motels might not bill Family of Woodstock until 60 or 90 days, depending upon, you know, their business practices. So that's why we're basically looking at the end of each quarter, we're trying to make sure that we have all of the invoices that were incurred.
I was actually thinking about something a little different, which is that my understanding is that during 2023, DSS may have been behind in terms of payments on this contract to Family, and that could influence their ability to hire additional people to actually fulfill services. Maybe that didn't happen with them.
No, that didn't happen. They were not experiencing any kind of staffing shortages as a result of this, and you know, we're very responsive in connection with processing the invoices that we receive, and we know that they rely on getting those invoices processed, so that wasn't part of the variables that were in play.
Any other questions?
Any discussion? Then I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 238. Moved by Legislator Corcoran, seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution 239, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $150,000 entered into by the county with Family of Woodstock through the Department of Social Services. And again, Commissioner Iposi, if you want to.
Sure, thank you. So this is a little bit different. These were for expenditures that exceeded the contract we have with Family of Woodstock for the shelters, Darmstadt and Family Inn. Similar concept, though, that by the end of the year, they had provided services through December of 2023, and then getting invoices into us around January, February, late as March, that reflected that they had provided services at the shelters that exceeded the original contract. So this is the amount that we're requesting to amend that so that they can be paid in full for the invoices they submitted to us in connection with services provided at the two shelters.
Yep, legislator Collins.
I'm going to have some of the same questions on this one, probably the same answers, but I just want to make sure.
Sure.
So we're in contact with them during this process to know that these invoices are coming. That's the first question. The second question is, have they fallen behind because of things that are preventable on their end, or is it just this is the way it is? I guess I don't like paying for things 4 months later when if they incur the cost. This seems like a more direct cost for them. They're not waiting for a bill from a hotel. So again, are we going to be in this position for a long time, or have they fixed their, I'm going to say fix their finance department?
I would say, and this is again based on my direct communications with Family of Woodstock and their billing department, their finance department, that this is typical annual basis with regard to the shelters as well. We normally get final invoices sometime in February, and you know, notwithstanding that they may be experiencing delays with regard to transacting invoices for other contracts they have, and there was, I think, a month that elapsed that we're responsible for with regard to putting this resolution forward. So again, I would say that I would not identify that there's any issues or delays with the invoices that they're generating on these two contracts.
Yep.
Yeah, just to elaborate on that, I do want to own up. Like, part of the delay was on my end because of the increase was so high that I wanted to make sure that we had a full understanding of what was happening with this contract. So that was part of the delay. On the bigger picture, our Commissioner of Finance is having conversations with Family of Woodstock because their contracts are not just with DSS. So they have contracts with many departments, and so they're talking to try to get them to be more timely with their invoices.
And we do know when expenditures are being incurred as a result of services being provided on our contracts that are going to be in excess of the amount not to exceed, and we do track those very closely. So it did not come as a surprise to us. I think you alluded to also asking that. We knew, but we're not going to be in a position really even in the most efficient circumstances to probably advance a resolution for that until February, because we want the 2023 books to close out for the invoices we're going to receive. And then just given the opportunity to advance resolutions, the earliest we could have been doing it would have probably been February or March.
Yep, Leslie McCullough. Would you happen to know what family, what their fiscal year runs as?
I know the answer. They have.
You know the answer?
I think it's a calendar year. Sorry. I think it's a calendar year.
If it's a calendar year, 4 months should not be an issue.
Well, again, this is, you know, they've been providing services through December 31st. So for them, they normally get us their invoices and our contract provides within 30 to 60 days. So we receive those by February. And again, I'm aware that there's some other delays that are being experienced that exceed that time frame. And I'm only speaking to these two contracts and how we monitor them.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Points of discussion? All right. Then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 239.
McCullough.
Moved by Legislator McCullough. Yes. Seconded by Legislator Harbin. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. I'll read the title of the next one, and then I have some information to share from the sponsor. Resolution 259, establishing a policy prohibiting addiction recovery and harm reduction services at facilities where children's services are offered. And I will share that I received a note from Legislator Gavaris, one of the sponsors, and I understand that Gina and him are on the same page about this, asking for a postponement here. And I'll just mention some of the things that he mentioned to me in his text. It was put in to start a conversation. They're going to be meeting with the county executives team. And I was invited to that meeting also to discuss the issue and come up with something that's amenable to everyone. And I said, does Gina feel the same way? And he said, yes, we just wanted the exec's office to understand that we're concerned about mixing children's services with adult harm reduction programs. We're looking for safeguards, that's all. So I'm happy to, if we want to discuss this, I'm happy to discuss it, but we can also just let that meeting happen, which is going to be next week, and just do a 1 month postponement here. So I would entertain a motion to postpone this, but I'm also open to discussion. So Gregory.
I just want to say a few words and yep. Maybe you could take some of it back. I feel like, I'm speaking for me, that somebody is being punished. And two, I don't really see a problem with having the programs in the same building. If you remember, we just passed a resolution for about $398,000 for the sheriffs to do security there. With my full-time job, they have buildings like this where they have many programs, and it hasn't been an issue, and I really don't think it'd be an issue here. If we do policies and procedures, I say we do it on the Somali side where they tighten up the restrictions of maybe the people roaming or whatever on that side, not this way. Just my opinion. I don't ever want to make somebody feel picked on. I think they do great work. I said my experience before that my mom passed away from drugs, so I don't have a problem sharing that. So for me, it's personal, so to speak. And I never want to make anybody feel picked on, especially it takes a lot to do that kind of work. And I think some of us should visit that place, spend some time there, and talk to the people that run the place. And maybe you get they'll get a different perspective of what it takes.
Legislative Brooklyn?
I don't want to speak for Gina, but I've had many conversations with her on this and I'm a co-sponsor of it. I'm not so sure she's looking at Somadi as Somadi, but them being the problem. It's just the situation where it's set up. And I know what the sheriff's controls inside, that's a good thing. But then there's also, you know, parking lot after the fact. And so those are the things that they were looking to discuss. So I'm in favor of the postponement so they could have the conversation. Obviously, the money, where it's going and the use for it, is surely, I think, agreed by all of us. It's a good thing. But again, conversation want to have by the sponsors, just because, again, not necessarily because it's Somadi and not dumping on Somadi, but the way it lays out and the stuff that we might not be able to control inside the building based on that, you know, and feelings of other parents with children, maybe just getting out of the car or parking lots, if things might or might not be happening there. So I don't think the conversation to be had, the meeting to be had is a bad thing, and I'm in favor of the postponement.
Okay. One last thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I'm done, I promise.
No, it's fine. You can talk as much as you want until we decide it's too much.
In a case, let's use Somadi as an example. That program is already in the building. The other one hasn't come yet. So what would happen or how would they work it if they don't want children in the same building as harm reduction and Somadi's been in the building first? What do you think?
Well,
that's a good question.
If I can respond to that, and even make it more broad, there are, depending on the definition of harm reduction, Somadi might not even be the only provider that we've talked about tonight that would be affected by this, because we have a resolution for Health Alliance Hospital Mary's Avenue campus, which provides services for children around mental health and provides, you know, would deal with an overdose, you know, situation. And so there, I think that's part of why this conversation needs to happen. The county executive did reach out to me, and I believe the sponsors as well, with concern about this resolution and the far-reaching effects. I realize that Somadi is, that the framing is that Somadi is not being targeted. Well, you know, the breadth of this might actually be consistent with that, and it might affect a lot more providers than we realize. And that's why the conversation needs to happen. And I really appreciate the way that the sponsors are responding to these concerns and asking for the postponement. Legislator Collins.
It feels to me like I'm skeptical of this, first of all. Having been to the sort of Justice Center yesterday, it's like we have a probation office, a sort of Justice Center in the same building. They have controls around the adults versus the not adults. We don't have a problem with that. So why is there a problem with something else where there are controls between harm reductions and the children? You know, as long as there's controls between that, I'm fine with it. So I think that there is an element of labeling and an element of characterizing a class of people as being undesirables. And I think that's offensive to me. I'm going to agree with Craig on this.
I'll entertain further discussion, but I first and foremost would entertain a motion to postpone.
I'll move to postpone.
Legislator Harbin with a motion to postpone. And I saw Legislator McCullough had his hand up for a second. Any discussion on the postponement itself? All right, then I will call the question on the postponement. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So that's our last resolution for tonight. I did ask to have on new business resolution 207, which is 207 was a late resolution that would have been in front of this committee had it been submitted on time. The sponsor assured me that it was not intentional, that it was submitted just fairly late enough that it didn't hit this committee last month. It was defeated in Laws and Rules. I'll read it. It was establishing a policy to maximize and prioritize the procurement of safe, effective, and comprehensive outpatient and substance use disorder withdrawal and stabilization services in and for the County of Ulster. The reasons on our new business tonight, we have no action to take on it. It's not before our committee. It was defeated in Laws and Rules. A petition to discharge was filed and executed successfully, so it is going to be on the floor this month. Because it is subject matter that this committee oversees, and because it was submitted just a moment too late to appear before this committee so that those who deal with this every month could talk about it, I wanted to give everyone the opportunity to discuss it. Because we will be voting on it, and if it did come to pass, the ramifications would certainly be the responsibility to for this committee to deal with. So I do want to give the deputy executive a chance to bring us up to speed on where things are. This is, I think, in a even more clear way, this is targeting Somati. There is a question of where they're at with their contract, and that question is very material to this. So I would like to hear from the county executive's team to give us an update on that.
Sure. So Somati received an award of the opioid settlement funds, and that original award was through December 2023. They were asked in about May of 2023 whether they would like to avail of an option to extend the time. No cost, no dollar amount change, time extension. They said yes, and so they have that assurance from the county that they basically have, so we technically have an active contract with them per that letter. However, it's a little bit complicated because since they got that letter, the comptroller's office started their audit. And so we haven't put forth a contract amendment yet for 2024 while we've worked through some of the concerns that she raised. So that's basically the status of things. We've been waiting on one key milestone, which is that Somati applied to the state for a license for their expanded outpatient clinical services, which is part of what we funded them for. They've been operating on a provisional license, but now they're applying for their actual license, and that's like a robust vetting process. We're supposed to be hearing back from the state, and we wanted to make sure that they were able to go through that process and get their license before we move forward with any contract amendment extending their time. Again, this would only be a no-cost time extension, so that's where we are at currently. But we're following up with the state to figure out when we'll hear back.
Legislator Collins?
My understanding of this particular sequence of actions is that we sign a contract with somebody. That contract had an expiration date of December 31st, 2023. The contract itself did not have an extension clause in it, but the purchasing director was able to legally extend the contract. Is that correct?
Yes, it's for no cost. I think that's
exactly.
A key. That's a key.
Exactly.
It's
a no cost.
Here. It's a no cost time only extension.
Okay. So there was the last time this was brought up in a committee, there was a misstatement or misunderstanding that there was an extension within that contract. The extension was not within that contract, but the extension was done by the purchasing director, which is a lie.
Correct. Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
I just want to clarify that because it's a distinction that matters to certain people. So given that, this contract is still in effect, even though there is no extension within the contract. That's all I want to say.
Any other questions or points of discussion? So this will be on the session agenda, and I just wanted everyone in this committee to be prepared for that.
I do have one question on the. It's a discharge question.
Yep.
So when a petition to discharge is done, it would not normally come to the committees again.
Correct. But committee chairs can do whatever they want when it comes to things like new business.
Okay. Thank you.
That's why it's on here, but isn't actually in our committee packet. Yeah. And it's also like, we've not really seen it in this format in the past, but like one thing that I like to do if I know about it is if there's a forthcoming resolution that hasn't been submitted yet, that's sometimes nice to put in new business. So like it's just good to have those, especially if it's something like with the county executive team. Like we've had situations where like I'll know they'll reach out, especially like the planning department will reach out and say, hey, we have this resolution that's going to be before you. We know that you don't like getting things last minute and then having to make a decision. The contract isn't ready, so we can't actually submit the resolution, but if you put it on new business, at least you can have an extra month that it can be discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that we started to do last year, and it was super, super helpful. So as, you know, chair, at any point when I can do that, I just find it to be super helpful. I hate being put in a position of, like, having to vote on something this month because we have to, when it's probably been in the works for a while. And so in any event, there's a few different reasons why you would put something on like this. The petition to discharge process is in its own right kind of complicated. I just have a feeling that we're going to see, it seems there have been a lot of petitions to discharge. And I think it's just, well, I could go into why I think that is, but that's probably not something I should do for this seat right now. But in any event, that was that on new business. We don't have any old business, and I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Legislator Corcoran, second by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thanks, everybody.